We're holding on Kuf Nun Vav Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing on the topic of preparing food for animals on Shabbos, Mishnah says, Mechatchenes hadloin lifnei abehema, you're allowed to cut up pumpkins for animals on Shabbos. According to Rashi, the chiddush is like this. The pumpkins themselves are detached from the ground. So there's no problem of picking them, or which obviously you wouldn't be allowed to do, or that they were picked on Shabbos, in which case they're muktzah. However, Rashi says usually pumpkins or gourds or whatever you know, however you want to translate them are usually food for people. They're not usually meant for feeding to animals. In particular, some of the Mepharshim explain what Rashi means is, in other words, that they're meant as food for people, and you would have to cook them in order to make them edible to people. So therefore, when they're raw on Shabbos, then they're not edible at this point without doing a malacha on Shabbos. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is saying that you're allowed to repurpose them for animals and feed it to them. And there's a Tosfos elsewhere that discusses the possibility maybe we actually are talking about even they were attached to the ground at the beginning of Shabbos, and the Chiddush is that even though they were detached from the ground somehow or other, let's say, for example, a goy did it without your knowledge, nevertheless, you'd still be allowed to. They're not considered muktzeh in that sense, and you're allowed to feed them to the animals. There's an avela lifnei klavim. Similarly, you're allowed to cut up an animal that died and feed it to the dogs. So here Rashi also explains that the animal was alive bein hashmoshes. So it only died after that. So bein hashmoshes, it was still something where it would have been eventually edible by people. Again, though, you would have to do malachas in order to do that. You'd have to shecht it, you'd have to cook it, etc. Nevertheless, this Mishnah is still telling us that you're allowed to cut it up. It's not considered mitzvah. Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion about the pros and cons of that. On the face of it, if you have a sodom involved in preparing it, then how is it not muktzah? So Tosfos says because you have actually certain kinds of creatures that you can feed to dogs while they're alive, for example, small birds or whatever. So therefore, that's not really an issue. Then Tosfos brings another girsa. Which makes it work out better. Okay. Anyway, that's according to the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im lo hayse nevela me'erev Shabbos. No, if the animal was not nevela already before Shabbos, if it was still alive when Shabbos came in, asura, then it would be also to cut it up for animals, lefisha einam and amuchan, because it's not yet prepared before Shabbos. And we know throughout Masechta, we've had a number of machlokasin of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon on various aspects of mukta. One of them is on this question of whether something has to be muchan, whether something has to be pre-prepared before Shabbos that you intended to use it for food on Shabbos. In a case like this, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the animal was still alive coming into Shabbos. The only way to make it into food would have been to do malachas of shechita and so forth, and therefore it's not considered muchan, and therefore it's also to feed it to animals on Shabbos, says Rabbi Yehuda. Whereas the Tanna Kamma, which as the Gemara is going to say is Rabbi Shimon, will allow it because he doesn't hold of the, he in general he's more makel on the dinim of mukta, and one of them is that he doesn't hold of this concept that it has to be muchan. Okay, so who is the halacha like? So like Moses Itmar. We have a discussion of Amoraim and a simon for remembering the names of the Amoraim that are involved. Oral Shachaz Simon. Oral stands for Ula, Rav, and Ula, Rav, and Levi, who all say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. And Shachaz is Shmuel, Rabbi Yechanan, and Zeiri, who all say the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. There's an interesting, Pashtos is just a simon to help remember the names of the Amoraim. There is an interesting little sefer called Lamnatseach LeDavid from Reb David Paro, one of the big Sfardish Rabbanim of a couple hundred years ago. He was a Mechutin of the Chidah, he was a Rav in a number of different Sfardish Kehilas in Bulgaria and whatever. Anyway, he has a sefer there where, among others, he talks about the different simonim in Shas and the deeper idea behind them. So he says, as far as here, We're talking about the dinim of mukta, where you have to have certain things are off limits on Shabbos because you may come to carry them or do malacha or what have you with them. So the three Amoraim who say that it's also the simon for their names is the word oral. Like an oral is something, an orla means something completely off limits. Like an oral needs a bris mila, a orla you can't eat, etc. So therefore they're saying that these things are off limits. You need to keep them off limits in order that you don't end up doing malachas with it on Shabbos and causing power to flow to Tumah, to Kirchas HaTumah on Shabbos. As opposed to the Chachamim who say that it's Mutter, the ones who simon as Shachas, the word Shachas, he says, is related to the word Shchiza, which is sharpening a knife. So they're saying, like, so to speak, in Kabbalah Dikosius, it's okay, we have a knife over here to shech those Chitzonim, and therefore we don't need to worry about their Yunika, and therefore we have a narrower definition of Mukta, and we have less concern about that you might use one of these items inappropriately on Shabbos. Okay, so the Gemara says, Oma Ola Halacha Kerev Yehuda, Shmuel Oma Halacha Kerev Shimon. So to start with, Ola says the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, in other words, again, as far as this matter, that you need hachana, that when you have something that's not obviously food before Shabbos, then you need hachana, you need pre-designation of it before Shabbos in order to be able to use it. And the Gemara continues, Va'af Rav Sava Halacha Kerbi Hoda. Rav is the second opinion, who also says the Halacha is like Kerbi Hoda. Midekarchi Zuzi. And we know this because of the din involving mats that are used to spread over the merchandise in ships. Rashi mentions over here that Zuzi is the Aramaic word for ships. Earlier in the Masechta, when we had this, Rashi explained a little bit differently, actually, that Zuzi means paired up, because they had these mats usually went in pairs. Anyway, the point is, such mats that are used to cover the merchandise on a ship, the Rav also a Shmuel Shori. So Rav said that it's also to handle them. Rav said it's also to handle them on Shabbos because what purpose do you use them for? You only use them usually to cover the merchandise, and that's not something you can do on Shabbos. Therefore, Rav says unless you designated before Shabbos that you're planning to do something else with them, then you can't use them for anything else. Whereas Shmuel says it's mutter because, as we're going to say soon, Shmuel holds the halacha as like Reb Shimon. Okay, Va'af Levi Sava Halacha Kerbi Hoda. We see a third Amora. Levi also holds the Halacha as a Kerbi Hoda. And we see that Ki Hoda Levi have Ki Havo Maisi Treftu Ki Hoda Levi, like we have the case of Levi, Ki Havo Maisi Treif Salakamebi Yematova. If they would bring him a Shaila in Hilchas Treifas on Yom Tov, so on Yom Tov somebody had shechted an animal, which of course you're allowed to do. Now they had a Shaila whether it's kosher or not. And they brought it to Levi to Paskin on. Levi, loy have a chazulei elaki yosef akilkalisa. Levi would look at the shayla only if he was sitting by the garbage heap. Because that way, if it turns out to be terefa, he can leave it right there. Now, why did he do that? Omar, because he says, Duma loy miskashra, after all, it's a shayla, it might turn out that it's teref, and if it's teref, you can't eat it. And we wouldn't even be able to feed it to the dogs. Now, why not? That's based on the idea that you need hachana. If you say you don't need hachana, then there's no problem. Right now, it's not edible to people anymore because it turns out to be terefa. So therefore, you're allowed to repurpose it for the dogs. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, which we're saying Levi holds like that, we would say that no. Since before Yom Tov, your intention was for it to be food for people, and on Yom Tov, of course, you're allowed to do the malachas that are going to make it food for people, to shecht it and cook it and so forth. Therefore, if its status changes on Yom Tov, and now it becomes and now we shechted it and we found that it's terefa, Levi holds like Rabbi Yehuda that now it's completely mukta. There's nothing you can do with it. Obviously, you can't feed it to people because it's terefa. You can't even feed it to dogs because it's not mina mukhan, and therefore Levi would just throw it in the garbage. So therefore, he would dafka sit by a garbage heap when he was paskening on such shilas on Yom Tov. So we see that those three Amoraim, Rav, Ula, Rav, and Levi, all hold the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, Shmuel Amar Halacha Kerab Shimon. On the other hand, Shmuel says the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. So in this and a number of other issues involving Muktzah, therefore Rabbi Shimon says there's no problem with it. You're allowed to handle these things on Shabbos. In particular, in connection with our Mishnah, then Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of this issue. Rabbi Shimon rather does not hold of this issue of Mukhan, that it has to be pre-designated before Shabbos. It's okay. The animal died on Shabbos. We said in the Mishnah, that was the Tanakh. with Reb Shimon, that you're allowed to cut up the nevela for animals on Shabbos. So that's Shmuel. Ba'af Ze'iri sava halacha k'Reb Shimon. Ze'iri also holds that the halacha is like Reb Shimon, and we see that the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Beitza. The Mishnah says, "Behema shemesa." If an animal dies on Yom Tov, lo yizizenu mimakoyma, you're not allowed to move it from its place. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that would apply broadly to any animal because, again, it's not mochan. But v'tirgama ze'iri bebehema skodshim. Ze'iri explains in the Gemara and Beitz over there that actually this din refers only to an animal of kodshim. Because kodshim, you have two reasons why once it's dead, you can't do anything with it. Number one, it's kodshim, it's also b'hana. You can't be poide it. You can't be poide it for two reasons. Number one, because in order to be poide an animal of hekdesh, you need what's called hamada v'harocha. You need to be able to have it stand up in front of the kohen and the kohen evaluates it. Now it's dead. You can't do that, obviously. Rashi mentions over here only the second reason, which is that anyway, even if that weren't an issue, you're not allowed to be poida kodshim. We learned this many times when we learned Masech, when we learned Seder kodshim. You're not allowed to be poida kodshim where the only thing you're going to be able to do with it after the pidyon is feed it to the dogs, which is the case over here because the animal died and it's nevela. So therefore, so the point is, the fact that Ze'iri has to say that Mishnah is talking only about Kodshim implies that he holds like Reb Shimon, because if he held like Reb Yehuda, then he would say the Mishnah is like Reb Yehuda, and it applies to any animal. Alva b'chulin shapur dami, implying, in other words, he says if it was a chulin animal, there's no problem. You are allowed to move it because you can cut it up and feed it to dogs. Okay. And Reb Yechanan also says, he's the third one on this side, that the halacha is like Reb Shimon. But the problem with that is, Umi Amar Rabbi Yechanan Hachi, did Rabbi Yechanan really say such a thing? V'ha'amar Rabbi Yechanan halacha kistam mishnah, as we've had a few times already in our Masechta, and it comes up in many places in Shas, Rabbi Yechanan says that the halacha is always like a stam mishnah, utnan, and we have a stam mishnah in Masechta Beitza that implies like Rabbi, that seems to be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Mishnah says there, Ein mevakin etzim min hakoros, on Yom Tov, you're not allowed to chop wood from beams, meaning you have a pile of beams that were meant for building, and now you decided to take one of those beams and break it up and break it up and use it for firewood. So you're not allowed to do that. Now that part, fine, that part is not necessarily only according to Reb Yehuda. Even Reb Shimon would agree, because the Gemara is going to say soon that Reb Shimon agrees by Muktz Machmas Chisorin Kis, and this is an example of that. Usually you would never use these beams for something else because they're big and expensive and you don't want them to get ruined. So in this case, Reb Shimon would agree that they're Muktz on those grounds, fine. But the point is, the Mishnah continues, you're also not allowed to chop wood from a beam that broke on Yom Tov. So you have a beam that was built into the house and it broke on Yom Tov. So the Mishnah is saying over there, you're not allowed to repurpose it for firewood. Now that can only be according to Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Reb Shimon, what would be the problem? Now here you have again the Bein HaShmoshes. It wasn't yet broken. It wasn't yet meant for firewood. That developed only later. So therefore, so the Mishnah is, and nevertheless, the Mishnah say you can't cut it up for firewood. That would only be according to Rabbi Yehuda. Reb Shimon, on the face of it, would have no problem with it. So how is Reb Yechanan saying the halacha is like Reb Shimon? If you have a stam mishnah against that, that the halacha is, which seems, which and the stam mishnah is according to Reb Yehuda. The Gemara answers Reb Yechanan hahu k'Reb Yosi by Yehuda masnila. Reb Yechanan's version of that mishnah continued that's only according to Reb Yosi by Yehuda. So therefore, it's not a stam mishnah. Now, our Mishnah for that purpose is not considered a Stam Mishnah because we have the opinion of Reb Shimon, but we also have the opinion of Reb Yehuda in it. When Reb Yechanan says halacha k'Stam Mishnah, he means when you have a Stam Mishnah with no other dissenting opinion in it. Here you have Reb Yehuda's opinion, so therefore it's not a Stam Mishnah, but we were concerned about that Mishnah in Beitza, and again, the Gemara is answering that according to Reb Yechanan, it's not in fact a Stam Mishnah, because actually his version of the Mishnah is that that's only according to Reb Yosi, is that the Mishnah itself says that that's only according to Reb Yosi by Yehuda. With the matter of the beam, actually, you have a different issue involved with the, you have a different issue involved with the beam, namely an issue called Nigodei Skatzai Leben Hashmoshes Eskatzai LeKol HaYoma, which we talk about in the third perek, among other places, that when something we sometimes say, well, we're going to see soon that we're going to see soon that there's a machloikus on that also. That if something was mukta at the beginning of Shabbos, does it remain mukta for the rest of Shabbos? Now over here, you have a case like that. On the face of it, over here, it is on the face of it, over here, it is mukta. It is iskatzai bein hashmoshes because, after all, it was part of the house. You had no intention of using it for firewood before Shabbos. So Tosfos over here discusses a little bit and says maybe Rabbi Yechanan doesn't hold of that concept. The Gemara itself is going to mention soon, actually, that you have a number of machlokasin of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and one of them, actually, one of the machlokasin we have had on this topic before is this matter of Migudis Katzai. We had in the third parak cases involving over there, for example, a lamp that was lit at the beginning of Shabbos, whether you would be allowed to move it later on Shabbos after it's no longer lit, where actually that's a different thing. Actually, that's Mukta Machmas Isu. But you have certain cases where something was Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos and now is no longer mukta. Tosfos actually earlier in the Masechta also discusses the difference between maybe there's a difference anyway. Maybe we do say migudis katzai, but maybe only if you were doiche biadaim. You did something before Shabbos to make it unusable before Shabbos or before Yom Tov to make it unusable. So then it remains unusable for the rest of Shabbos. Maybe that doesn't apply. Maybe that doesn't apply so much when it's something that just in and of itself was mukta. Okay. Fine. So no proof from that Rabbi Yechanan. So no problem with that on Rabbi Yechanan's opinion, because he can say the halacha is like the Stam Mishnah, and also say the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, because he says that Mishnah in Beitza is not in fact a Stam Mishnah. Okay.
Why don't we go just by the numbers to decide who the halacha is like?
What do you mean by the numbers? First of all, we have three Amiroyim on each side. So it's three and three. It's exactly balanced. Who that halacha is like, we're going to get to soon. We're going to get to soon who that halacha is like. Right now, we're just dealing with the question of who holds what. Okay. The Gemara says, Toshma. Let's bring another proof. Again, where you have a Stam Mishnah in Masechta Beitza, which seems to be according to Rabbi Yehuda, and yet, so how does that fit with Rabbi Shimon saying, with Rabbi Yechanan saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? So a Mishnah says there in Beitza, Maschilin ba'arema sateven, on Yom Tov, you're allowed to take a pile of straw where you never used anything from that pile before, and start taking straw from that to use for firewood. But you're not allowed to use wood that is from the mukta, which is the storehouse or whatever behind your house, where usually you keep that wood for the winter time and you're going to use it for firewood over there. So the point is, in other words, the wood you put there intending to store it long term. Therefore, the Mishnah is saying, and apparently this Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you're not allowed to now take that wood and decide on Yom Tov, you know what, I don't want to save it until the winter, I'm going to use some of it now. Because again, you set it aside for a different purpose. You set it aside to use later on in the year, or next year or whatever. As opposed to, the Mishnah is saying you're allowed to start in on the straw, which you didn't use before. Now, at this point in the discussion, we're assuming that we're talking about that the straw has no other use than for firewood. Namely, straw, as we've talked about before, has three purposes. You could feed it to animals. You could feed it to three major uses. You could feed it to animals. You could use it to make bricks, or you could use it for kindling. Now, if it's able to be fed to animals, then obviously it's not mukta, and there's no real chiddush that you're allowed to use some of it. If it's spoiled, so now you can't feed it to animals. Now the Gemara discusses in Beitza the next logical thing you would want to do with it is save it from making bricks. But let's say we're talking about over here, Rashi doesn't mention it over here, but the Gemara mentions it over there, that we're talking about not only it's spoiled, but it also has thorns in it, so you can't make bricks in it, because if you try, you're going to hurt your hands. So therefore, the only thing that's meant for, is to begin with, is to use for kindling, to use for firewood. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that that's fine. You're allowed to start using that pile for the first time because it was mukhan before Shabbos, before Yom Tov, rather, because there was no other thing you could do with it other than use it for kindling. But the point is, he's saying, Avaloi be'etzim Shimon Mukta. Again, that can only be according to Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Shimon, on the face of it, would not have a problem with you using the wood from the Mukta, because so what? Okay, you designated that you're going to use it at some time in the far future. So what? Rabbi Shimon doesn't care about that. The answer is, so you have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yochanan is saying the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yochanan says Halacha is Stam Mishnah, how does that jibe? The answer is, we're not just talking about any wood over there. We're talking about cedar wood or ashuach wood. Rashi explains that a cedar and an ashuach, Erez is a male cedar tree, ashuach is a female cedar tree. On the side here, it brings from the Aruch a little bit differently. Arzi is cedars, and ashuachi is broshim, which is cypress trees. Whatever it is, they have very good quality wood, which is usually not used for kindling at all. Usually you use it for building. So the muktzamachmas chesaron kis. So that's an example of muktzamachmas chesaron kis. You would never use that wood for any other purpose because you don't want it to get ruined. So therefore, I feel that Rabbi Shimon Moda, so even Rabbi Shimon would agree that's a category of mukta that even he agrees exists. So then fine. So that Mishnah could actually be like Rabbi Shimon, and therefore fine. Rabbi Yechanan says halacha kastam Mishnah, and that Mishnah would be, that Stam Mishnah would be like Rabbi Shimon. Okay. Toshma, let's prove from another Mishnah in Beitza. This is the last Mishnah in Masech the Beitza. The Mishnah says, Ein mashkin v'shochtin es hamidborius. On Yom Tov, you're not allowed to give a drink and then afterwards shecht the midborius animals. We had a whole sugya about mukta in the third parak of Amasekta, and we discussed this mission over there. We had a machlokas, what exactly midborius are versus the next one that I mentioned, bisis. Basically, in other words, so you have, there are animals that come home from grazing every evening. There are ones that come home only when the rainy season starts. So like they stay out in the field from Pesach until after Sukkot. And then you have the ones that never come home. They belong to you, but they always stay out in the outside. And we discussed there, we had a machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim, what exactly is the definition of midborius versus bisius. The Chachamim said over there that if they come home every night, then they're bisius. If they only come home after a few months, then they're midborius. Rebbe says that even if they come home eventually, even if they only come home in cheshvin time, then they're still bisius, and therefore they're not mukta. Only if they never come home are they midborius. Anyway, the Mishnah says there, so you're not allowed to water and shech the midborius animals because they're mukta b'pashtus, because you didn't intend before Yom Tov to be able to shech them, because they live most of the time out in the meadows and they're not easily available to you. The mashkin we mentioned over there, and Rashi mentions it over here, is that the Mishnah, the Gemara mentions at the end of Beitza, that you want to water an animal, you want to give an animal a drink before you shecht it. It helps with sircha. Rashi over here and in other places explains that it means it makes the skin easier to strip off of the animal. There are other Rishonim who learn. The Shach mentions it in Shulchan Aruch. Well, Shach is in Akron, but whatever. The Shach mentions in Shulchan Aruch, among others, that it means that it makes that if there are any sirchus on the lungs, then they detach, one end of them detaches from whatever other organ inside the chest it might be attached to, and therefore it makes that there's less problems with treifus, because hanging sirchus are generally not an issue. Anyway, whatever it is, you're not allowed to do that with the midborius animals, again, because they're mukta, because you didn't intend to eat them before Yom Tov, because they were out in the meadows, and you didn't know whether they're going to come home. Ava mashkin v'shech in the sabaisis, but you are allowed to water and shech the bisis animals, according to the Chachamim over there, it means the ones that come home every night from grazing. According to Rebbe over there, it could mean even the ones that stay out in the meadows until Cheshvin, and then they come home during the rainy season. Anyway, so the point is, there again, you have a Stam Mishnah that distinguishes and says that you're only allowed to shecht the Bisis on Yom Tov, not the Midborius. Again, that can only be according to Rabbi Yehuda. That could, because according to Rabbi Shimon, what would be the problem? So what? It's not Mukhan. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold that you need Mukhan. Okay, Tosfos mentions that actually in the Sugya there, in the third Perek, we did learn another possibility that the Gemara brings up, the possibility over there. Maybe it's considered Doicha B'Yadayim. Maybe it's considered that he actually sent the animals off to graze, and therefore it's considered like the equivalent we talked over there about, for example, you take grapes or figs or whatever to dry on top of your roof, where they go through a stage where they're complete during the time when they're drying, when they're completely inedible. And even Reb Shimon agrees that such things are considered mukta because you were doicha b'yadayim. So maybe the Gemara could have given that answer over here, but the Gemara would prefer not to do that. That even if the animals just to go and graze by themselves, we still want to be able to say that they're, that the Mishnah is implying that they're mukta as long as they don't come home every night according to the Chachamim, or after several months according to Rebbe. Anyway, again, the question is that you have a Stam Mishnah saying, like, in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So how is Rabbi Yochanan, who says halacha k'stam Mishnah, how is he saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? So before we get to the answer, we'll talk again about we mentioned when we learned that Gemara, and when we learned that Gemara in the third perek, then I mentioned then that there was a sicha one of the early years that ever made a hadron on Masech de Beitza and talked at some length about both of these things that we mentioned, both of these points that we mentioned about this matter of giving the animal to drink before you shecht it, and it helps with sircha, and about this distinction between Baisius and Midbarius. So the first thing that Rebbe explains over there, Bechlal, there's a concept that talks about in Chassidus, that this mashkin b'sheichdin means on a ruchniyistika level as well, giving a drink, having a drink by a fabrengin, where you're fabrengin with fellow Jews, fellow chassidim, and improving your avodas Hashem, helps you be able to shecht the nefesh of Bahamas more easily, and helps with sircha. So the Rebbe explains there in the sircha that you have those parts of the gashmiyistika world that you actually have to be deeply involved with. Those are like meat, which you eat and you absorb and it becomes part of your body. And then you have the other kinds that you have to work with on a more superficial level. You don't actually get deeply involved with those things. Like a skin of an animal, you don't eat it, you wear it. So therefore, so being able to separate the skin from the flesh more easily represents this idea of more easily being able to distinguish in your avodah what you're supposed to be mevarer, how, which ones you're supposed to be more deeply involved with and which not. And a drink, a mashka, a drink by a fabrengen, helps to clarify that kind of thing. Then as far as the midborious versus bisis thing that Rebbe explains there, that the Chachamim take the view that, so if you have an animal which on you want to be able to shecht it on Yom Tov, you want to be able to use it for your Yom Tov Sudah, which is in itself a mitzvah to enjoy Yom Tov, or even you want to be able to bring it for a korban. So the Chachamim say, when are you able to bring such a lost soul home and use it for a korban and then elevate it to Hashem? Only if at least when it's dark, it comes home, meaning, in other words, in Ruchnius, that when times are good, it doesn't realize that it needs to be home together, where it belongs, with Hashem, with the Torah, whatever, but at least when it gets dark, it realizes that, then okay, there's hope for such a neshama, therefore on Yom Tov, you're able to get involved with such a neshama and even bring it as a korban. But if not, if it stays out in the meadows, even then, when it gets dark, then the Chachamim say it's too far gone for you to be able to do much with it, at least on Yom Tov. And on Yom Tov, when you yourself are on a higher level, then you're not able to handle such a neshama and bring it back to Elikos. Whereas Rebbe, being a Nasi, be Yisrael, takes a broader view of it. He says that no, even an animal, even a Nefesh of Bahamas like that, that won't come home even during the bad times, even when it's dark, as long as at least sometime, he says that even as long as it comes home sometime, even if it's only after many months, even if it's only when it's coming in the rainy season, then it's still bisus, then it's still an animal that still has a shaychus to the house, and you're able to shecht it, and you're able to bring it to the korban and bring it closer to Hashem, even on Yom Tov. Only if it never comes home, only if it always stays out, then you're going to have a harder time, then they're going to have a much harder time being able to bring it up to Kedusha. Then you're going to have to wait for the weekdays when you work more directly with the world in order to be able to do that. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So the point is, again, we're left with the question that Mishnah in Beitza is a Stam Mishnah. It seems to be according to Rabbi Yehuda, because only according to Rabbi Yehuda would this distinction between Baisis and Midbarius even exist. According to Rabbi Shimon, there'd be no reason to make the distinction because the animal is edible. Anyway, the animal can be shechted and eaten on Yom Tov, according to him, either way. Rabbi Yechanan says halacha k'stam Mishnah. How is Rabbi Yechanan saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon then? The answer is Rabbi Yechanan stama achrina ashkach. The answer is fine, but Rabbi Yochanan found another Stam Mishnah, which goes like Rabbi Shimon, and which clearly goes like Rabbi Shimon, and therefore he can say, so okay, once he says Halacha Kastam Mishnah, then okay, he's entitled to pick which Stam Mishnah he's going to say the Halacha is like. Namely, we learned earlier in our Masechta, but now it's not really a Stam Mishnah because it's actually going to be a Machlokas B'Shamay B'Shilol, but we have a concept called B'Shamay B'Mkoyim B'Shilol Ein Mishnah, that when B'Shamay B'Shilol argue, almost always, not only is the Halacha not like B'Shamay, but B'Shamay's opinion is like not even admitted as a valid opinion in Halacha anymore that you could potentially follow. In other words, when we say in Mishnayos, for example, we have now, let's say, the Machlokas of Yehuda and Reb Shimon, let's say, or other Machlokas and throughout Shas, we say, okay, the Halacha is Paskin like one, but nevertheless, the other one is a legitimate opinion. At least until the Halacha is Paskin, the other one is a legitimate opinion, and Amoraim are entitled to pick it. As opposed to here, B'Shamay B'Shilol, B'Shamay is not even something that the Amoraim can pick to follow. So as ain't a Mishnah, it's like as if it's not part of the Mishnah. So therefore, a Mishnah that has Basil's opinion against Bishamah can be considered a Stam Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, we learned that at the end of the 21st Perek of our Masechta, Bishamah Ayim Magbiyin Ma'al HaShochan Atzomos HaKlipin. Bishamah says you're allowed to take off the table bones and shells. We said over there, Rashi learned that we're talking about bones that are inedible and shells that are inedible, and you're still allowed to take them off the table. Tosfos said over there, not necessarily. It might mean softer bones, like the kind that you could feed dogs, or softer shells, the kind, for example, let's say apple peels or something, which people could in principle eat. So that's B'Shamay. B'Shilol Amim Mensalak is a tablet called a Menara. B'Shilol says, no, they're Mukta. Therefore, the only thing you can do is take the board and shake it off. We said there, the board is either the breadboard or it's a board on the floor that's meant to catch the crumbs and whatever. Anyway, the point is, but Rab Nachman said, now on the face of it, in that Mishnah then, B'Shamay is Mekel and B'Shilol is Machmer. But Rab Nachman says, no. Anu ein lanu, no. All we have is what we learned from our Rebbeim, that the Mishnah is backwards. Ela B'Shamay k'Rabbi Yehuda, or B'Shilol k'Rabbi Shimon. B'Shamay holds like Rabbi Yehuda, therefore they hold that these bones and shells are mukta. And B'Shilol holds like Rabbi Shimon, who is more makel and says that they're not mukta because they're not mukta. Again, according to Rashi, because even though they're not edible anymore, according to Tosfos, only because they're still edible, because they're now still able to be fed to animals. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yochanan also agrees with Rabbi Nachman that the Mishnah as we have it is backwards. Therefore, it comes out, B'Shilol holds like Rabbi Shimon, and okay, B'Shilol is Stam Mishnah, because again, B'Shamay B'Mkoyim B'Shilol ain't a Mishnah. So there you go then. So you have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon, so therefore Rabbi Yochanan could still stick with his rule, Halacha K'Stam Mishnah, and still say that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. The Mishnah in Beitza, okay, that's a Stam Mishnah the other way around. Rabbi Yochanan can say, fine, there's one Stam Mishnah against another Stam Mishnah, I'm entitled to pick which one I say the Halacha is like. Okay. So now the question is, so now throughout the Masechta, we've been dealing with question of the various machlokas and of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon on the halachas of Shabbos. Now we've had actually just in the dinim of Muktzah alone, we had a few different machlokas in between them. We had this machlokas that we've just been dealing with over here about something muchan, whether something was not pre-designated before Shabbos, or before Yom Tov, can you repurpose it for a different purpose on Shabbos or Yom Tov? You have another machlokas between them about noilad. Let's say, for example, a case of an egg that was laid. Are you allowed to use it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov? You have other machlokas in that we've had between them. You have a machlokas about, as the Gemara is going to mention now, about muktzah machmas mius, where you have a keli that is disgusting because it's dirty and you would usually never use it for any other purpose. Is it Mukta on Shabbos? Rabbi Yehuda says yes, Rabbi Shimon says no. And you also have Mukta Machmas Mitzvah, where you have, it was also at the beginning of Shabbos, for example, a lamp that was lit at the beginning of Shabbos, where it was also at the beginning of Shabbos. And related to that, we had a Machlokas earlier also about this question that we discussed just before, about Migud Es Katzai Lebein HaShmoshes Es Katzai L'Kula Yoyma. Do we say that once something is Osir at the beginning of, is Mukta at the beginning of Shabbos or at the beginning of Yom Tov, it remains Mukta the whole rest of Shabbos or Yom Tov, even if the original reason because it's Mukta went away? So you have all these machlokas in between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. On top of that, you also have, we've had a couple of other machlokas in between them in our Masechta about Hilchos Shabbos. We've had about the question of Dovasha and Miskaven. If you, for example, the case where you're dragging a bench or something and digging up the dirt, is that you may or may not dig up the dirt. Rabbi Yehuda says it's also, Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter. You also had about Malacha She'enet Tzricha Legufa. If you're doing a Malacha, but you're not doing, you're in a situation you'd rather not have been doing it, as Rashi says, or you're not doing it for the purpose that it was done in the Mishkan, as Tosfos says, or you're doing it in order to remove something harmful or whatever, as other Rishonim say. Anyway, there also we had a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda says it's all. Rabbi Yehuda says it's chayav chatas. Rabbi Shimon says it's potter. So now we're going to deal with the question: who is the halacha like? So Rav Ach pligi bar Rav Acha and Ravina. So Rav Acha and Ravina argue on this point. Chad ama b'chola torah kula halacha k'Rav Shimon. One of them says that throughout the whole Shabbos, regarding anything in Hilchos Shabbos, the halacha is like Rav Shimon, levar mi mukta machmas mios, except for the case of mukta machmas mios, umayniu neir yashan, namely a lamp that was lit in at one point, even if it wasn't lit at the beginning of this Shabbos, but because previously it was lit with, and therefore now it's the inside of it is dirty and greasy and whatever with oil, and you would never use it for any other purpose. Therefore, so one of them, Rav Acha and Ravina, says that in that the halacha would be like Rabbi Yehuda, that such a keli would be mukta. But all the other issues that we were talking about of mukta, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Bechlau, you have a machloikas rishonim within this machloikas amiroim over here, how to understand it. Are they talking only within the dinim of mukta, only within these four or five cases of mukta that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are arguing about, and one of them is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in all of them except for mukta machmas mios, or are we talking about more broadly, are we talking about also davar she'ein miskaven and malacha she'ein tzricha legufa? Some rishonim learn that we are talking about all of them. And in fact, they paskin about Dabar She'enei Miskaven and about Malacha She'enei Tzricha Legufa, like Reb Shimon as well. On the other hand, the Rambam apparently disagrees, because when it comes to Malacha She'enei Tzricha Legufa, he paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. So he apparently understands that the Gemara's rule over here is talking strictly within the dinim of Mukta. Within the dinim of Mukta, the Halacha is like Reb Shimon, with maybe this one exception of Mukta Machmas Mios, or not, as we're going to go on to say. But when it comes to other areas in Hilchos Shabbos, such as Malacha She'enei Tzricha Legufa, then the Rambam paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. Most of the other Rishonim paskin like Rabbi Shimon over there also. Okay. So anyway, so between Rav Acha and Ravina, so one of them says that Mukta Machmas Mios, the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. The other one says, no, the halacha is actually like Reb Shimon in that also. So a lamp that was previously used to light in is not Mukta on Shabbos, because conceivably you could use it to cover a keli or something. Levami Mukta Machmas Isser, the only exception he says where the halacha would not be like Reb Shimon is Mukta Machmas Isser. So only if the lamp was lit with on that Shabbos, so at the beginning of Shabbos, it was usur. At the beginning of Shabbos, it was usur because you can't move it because you're going to put out the lamp. Then we would say the halacha is not like Reb Shimon. But in other words, but if it was a lamp that was not lit that Shabbos, even though it was lit with on previous Shabbosim, then this opinion would say that the halacha is still like Reb Shimon in that, and it's not mukta. We have, the Gemara gives a general rule in other places in Shas, that whenever Rav Acha and Ravina are arguing, the halacha is always like the one who's more mekel, therefore it winds up that the halacha is like Rav Shimon, in everything, including Mukta Machmas Mios, and the only exception is Mukta Machmas Isser. Even within that, Tosfos says that even with Mukta Machmas Isser, it would only be also if dochei biyadayim, only if he specifically did something before Shabbos to make it also. In this case, he actually lit the lamp before Shabbos, so he did a maaseh to make it also, as opposed to if you have a case where something is also on its own, not because of an action that you do, then Tosfos says then that wouldn't be considered mukta. Other Rishonim disagree with that. Okay. But continues the Gemara, Aval Mukta Machmas Chisor and Kis. But when you have something which is mukta because, like we said before, because it's very expensive, and you would never want to use it for any other purpose, in order not and very expensive or very fragile or whatever, and you'd never want to use it for any other purpose, so as not to ruin it, then I feel it Rav Shimon Moida. Then even Rav Shimon agrees that is a category of mukta. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah. We learned earlier in our Masechta. Kolak Kalim Nitolin B'Shabbos. You're allowed to move any Kalim on Shabbos, even a klisha malachta le'isr, which could only be according to Reb Shimon, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, you would have many other categories of mukta. Chutz mi maser agadol, with the exception of a large saw, which they use to cut, wood, to cut large beams with it. It's mukta machas chasar and kiss, because you don't want the blade to break. Of a yosid shamachresha, or the blade of a plow, those kinds of things are examples of mukta machnas chasar and kiss. We actually gave other examples in the Gemara over there of similar things. The point is, in other words, the Mishnah didn't mean only those kalim; it meant things similar to those that are mukta machnas chasar and kiss. Again, that Mishnah can only be like Reb Shimon, because according to Reb Yehuda, you have many other types of mukta as well. So even Reb Shimon agrees that mukta machnas chasar and kiss is in fact mukta on Shabbos. This that we're saying, by the way, that the halacha is like Reb Shimon when it comes to mukta, that's on Shabbos. Yom Tov is a whole different matter, and we've talked about briefly before, and Be'ez Hashem, when we get to Masechta Beitzeh in due time, we'll talk about that when it comes to Yom Tov, there the halacha in mukta is generally like Reb Yehuda. And one reason for that is, in fact, in order that people are not careless with Yom Tov, given that on Yom Tov you're allowed to do many malachas involving food, and once you're allowed to do them for food, you're allowed to do them for other purposes, then we're concerned that maybe you might come to be mezalzel, or you might come to be careless with Yom Tov in general, and therefore the Chachamim made more stringent dinim of muktzah then for Yom Tov. The original machlokas in Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon applied to both Shabbos and Yom Tov. But in the end, we're saying when it comes to Shabbos, the halacha is generally like Reb Shimon. But when it comes to Yom Tov, then the halacha is generally like Reb Yehuda. Okay. The last Mishnah of the Masechta says, "Mefirin nedarim b'Shabbos." You're allowed on a husband is allowed to be mefir neder for his wife on Shabbos. So the Torah tells us in Parshas Matos. Beginning of Parshas Matos, that if a woman makes a neder, so if it's before she's married, if it's when she's still a naira living at home, then her father can be made for her nedarim. Her father can say about her neder mufalach, it's canceled for you, and then the neder is batal. If once she's married, then the husband has the same rights. He's able to say mufalach. He only has a certain amount of time to do it, and we're going to see in the Gemara that there's a machlokas on that. Is it that he has only until shkia of that day, or is it that he has 24 hours? From either way, it's from when he heard of the neder. So it could be that she made the neder last week. He only heard about it now. Either way, the clock starts ticking then. So we're saying you're allowed to be made for neder on Shabbos. We'll see in the Gemara why. Vinish olim l'dvarim shehen l'tzarech haShabbos. Now, one thing the Gemara does mention in Dvarim, even that we're saying you're allowed to be made for neder on Shabbos. Now, the usual way during the week would be that he says mufor loch. He says the neder is canceled for you. The Gemara mentions over there in Nedarim that if you're doing this on Shabbos, then you shouldn't do that. Instead, you should just, because then it's still more like a weekday activity. Instead, what you should do is you just give her the actual thing that she made a neder. Let's say she made a neder not to eat a certain kind of food. So you hand it to her and you say, tli v'ichli tli ushsi. You tell her verbally, take this and eat it, or take it and drink it. And then once she does, then the neder is batal. That's another method of hafara. And that way it's not so obvious on Shabbos that you're being made for the neder. Continues the Mishnah, Vinish Olam L'Nedarim Shem L'Tzarech HaShabbos. You're also allowed on Shabbos to go ask a Chacham or a Beis Din to be Matur and Neder that is L'Tzarech HaShabbos. So let's say, Rashi says, a person made a Neder, I'm not going to eat today, so now he wants to be Matur Neder, he's allowed to do that on Shabbos. We'll see in the Gemara whether the Mefir Nedarim is also referring only to Nedarim that interfere with Shabbos, or whether we're talking about Nedarim in general. Continues the Mishnah. Another thing you're allowed to do on Shabbos, you're allowed to close up a window or a skylight. Now, we learned about this earlier in the Masechta. We learned at the end of the 17th Perek, we had a machloikas Rebbe Eliezer and the Chachamim about a window shade or a window blind or whatever, whether you're allowed to put it up on Shabbos. We had Rebbe Eliezer said only if it's tied with a rope to the window frame and it's hanging off the ground. It's not all the rope is short enough that it doesn't go all the way down to the ground, whereas the Chachamim said it would be mutter even without that. So our Mishnah is, according to the Chachamim, that you're allowed to do that. You're also allowed on Shabbos to measure a piece of cloth to see whether it's tamei. Let's say, for example, Rashi says, so suppose the piece of cloth was tamei. Now it touched food, which is supposed to remain tahor, truma or kadshim. You want to check whether the piece of cloth is still able to transmit truma, which that will depend whether it's 3x3 etzbar, so 3x3 tfachim, as the case may be. So you want to measure it, so you're allowed to measure that on Shabbos because you're measuring for the purpose of a mitzvah. And similarly, you can measure a mikveh to make sure that it has at least 40 saw of water and you're able to tovel in it. Because those are measurements that are being done for a mitzvah. And the Gemara, the Mishnah continues, a ma'aseh b'mei aviv shel Reb Tzadik or b'mei Abba Shaul ben Botnis. It happened in the time of the father of Reb Tzadik and of Abba Shaul ben Botnis. That one time on Shabbos, shepokach was a morab tafiach. They stopped up a window or a skylight in the wall using an earthenware jug. So they took the jug and put it into the window hole to close up the window. Of a koshuas amakeda begemi, they tied a small klicheres, a small earthenware cup with a piece of grass. Later in Yesh Begigis Peseach Tefach in Lab, in order to find out whether there's an opening of a tefach in the gigis. A gigis is a barrel. We're going to see in the Gemara. We're going to talk at the bottom of the Amud and the top of the next Amud. What exactly happened over here? What exactly they were measuring? Why they needed to close up the window and why they needed to measure? So later in Yesh Begigis Peseach Tefach in Lab to see whether there's a tefach opening in this gigis, as we'll see in the Gemara what the exact scenario was. Based on what Abba Shaul ben Botnis and Reb Tzadik's father did, we learn from that that you are allowed to do that. You're allowed to close up a window. You're allowed to measure, and you're allowed to tie on Shabbos. So the tying would have to be a kesher she'ena shokayama. It's a non-permanent knot. If it's a permanent knot, of course, then it's one of the 39 malachas. But here, it's a non-permanent knot. First of all, because they didn't need the cup tied with the grass permanently, they only needed it for the moment to do the measurement, as we're going to say in the Gemara, and also because they were using grass, and the grass itself eventually falls apart, and it doesn't stay as a permanent knot. So actually, you have over here the Rebbe gave a couple of times a hadron on Masech the Shabbos, and one time, and what a couple of times the Rebbe addressed this mission over here. One thing is, as a matter of nigla, the Rebbe discussed the question when we say over here in a couple of sichas in Membeis that Rebbe talked about. So the closing up the window over here, clearly you're allowed to do it even when it's not l'tzorech mitzvah. You're allowed to close up the window, as the Chachamim said earlier in the Masechta. The measuring is only for the purpose of a mitzvah. Usually it's also to measure on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. As far as the tying, there you have a machlokes between Tosfos and the Rambam, whether the tying over here, when it's not a kesher shokayama, whether it's allowed also only for the purpose of a mitzvah, or is it mutter even more generally, even where it's not for the purpose of a mitzvah. So that I've discussed in a couple of sichas over there, the possibility that maybe the Yerushalmi disagrees with the Bavli on that, although it's interesting that Rebbe points out that actually the Yerushalmi for the last four prakim of Or Masechta is actually missing in the printed Yerushalmis. It was missing in the manuscript that they printed from. Nevertheless, the Rebbe says the fact that we don't find anywhere else in Shas that the Yerushalmi makes those distinctions, and the fact that the Mishnah, on the other hand, does put all these things together, suggests that the Yerushalmi would actually say that all three of them are mutter, only letzorech mitzvah, or even not letzorech mitzvah, as opposed to the Bavli over here, would be saying that some of them are only letzorech mitzvah. And the Rebbe talked about a couple of times also the deeper idea. You have a sicha in Chelik Yudalid where the Rebbe finishes off with it. That this poikikin umodin v'koshin b'shabbos is out. These are the last words of the Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos, and beruchnius it represents what Shabbos is all about. Poikikin that we start with on Friday night, we get rid of the chitzonim on Shabbos. The world goes up to a higher level, and as we say in Kegavna v'chol dinin misabrina, all the negative forces in the world go away on Shabbos. So therefore, poikikin, like we close off the influence to them that could come to them on Shabbos. That's closed off and unavailable to them. Then we go on to Moedidin. On the daytime of Shabbos, we bring down the gilui of the Midas of Atzilus. So that's Moedidin, Meloshin Midah, that we bring down the revelation of the Midas of Chesed through Yisod of Atzilus. and then v'koshrin, and then by and then when it comes mincha time, we tie it all together, which is why in mincha we say shabbos sois kodshechem yanuchu vam in the plural, because we're talking about over there. Then we're able to connect together the midos zah with malchus, and therefore we have this the plural over there vam. So over koshrin, and we tie them together on Shabbos. So those represent the three stages of the avoda of making the world into a place of elikus on Shabbos. First by stopping up the flow to the chitzonim, then by bringing down the midas, and then by tying them all together. In a different sicha, one time in Memches, that Rebbe also talked about that poikikin to stop up is an aspect of gvura. You're stopping off the flow to them. Moedin is chesed. You're bringing down things into midas and into chesed and the other midas. And v'koshrin then is tiferes, which ties the two of them together. And therefore, so the Mishnah is saying, the Mishnah is not just saying you're allowed to do these things on Shabbos on a deeper level. The Mishnah is saying that is what Shabbos is all about, is this kind of avoda of making the world, of bringing a lakus into the world and stopping the flow of it to the chitzonim and bringing down and then revealing a lakus in the world and tying it all together. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. We said in the Mishnah Mefir Nidorim of Shabbos, we said that a husband is allowed to cancel his wife's Nidorim on Shabbos. So Iboyelahu. Remember, the Mishnah had said, Mefir Nidorim of Shabbos, Vinish Olin Nidorim Shein Latzarech HaShabbos, that the husband can be made for his wife's Nidorim, and that you can go to ask a Shaila and be Matu Neder for Nidorim that are necessary for Shabbos. So the question is this that we're saying necessary for Shabbos, is this going on both of them or only the one of them? So Iboilahu, hafara bein letzorech bein shaloi letzorech, is it that the hafara you can do on Shabbos, whether that particular neder needs to, whether the neder is about something that would otherwise interfere with Shabbos or not? And then when it comes to asking a rav or based into mimatu neder, that would only be if the neder is going to interfere with Shabbos. For example, as Rashi said, you made a neder not to eat. And then, if we were to learn that way, in that case, that would explain why the Mishnah mentions them separately, why it doesn't just say Mefir Nedarim V'Nishon L'Dvarim V'Shabbos, because it would mean there's two different cases. One involves any kind of neder, and the other one involves only Nedarim that are L'Tzorech HaShabbos. So is it that, or Duma Hafara Nami Latzorech Ein Shalai Latzorech Loi, maybe the Hafara we're saying is only Mutter, also only if it's Latzorech, only if it's some kind of neder that is going to interfere with Shabbos. For example, she made a neder that she's not going to eat a certain kind of food on Shabbos. So that would be with Hafara. Only if it's something that's necessary for Shabbos, not if it's something that's not necessary, because the neder itself, let's say, doesn't interfere with Shabbos. Let's say, for example, the neder was that she's not going to put on makeup. That doesn't interfere with Shabbos, because you can't put on makeup on Shabbos anyway. So maybe the Mishnah is saying that kind, the husband can't be made for on Shabbos. And v'hod kapolig lahuma hadadi. So why would the Mishnah be separating them and putting the word b'shabbos in between? It's just mishum da'afara and sorach beistin or sheilat zuchah beistin. It's just because the mechanism of them is different. The hafara only needs the husband. Hataras nedarim requires beistin. So what is it? What does it mean when mefir nedarim? Does it mean any kind of neder, or does it mean only a neder which, if it's not canceled, is going to interfere with Shabbos? Toshma, the Tony Zuti Dveira Papa, Zuti Tora Braise in the Yeshiva of Rapapa, Mefir Nedarim Shabbos, Latzorech HaShabbos, that you're allowed to be made for Neder on Shabbos for the needs of Shabbos, implying Latzorech HaShabbos Ein Shalai Latzorech HaShabbos Loi. So there you go. Only if the Neder is going to impinge on Shabbos, only then are you able to be, only then is the husband able to be mefer on Shabbos, but otherwise he can't be mefer. Now, again, we mentioned before, you have two different opinions, which the Gemara is going to discuss in a minute over here. Is it that he has only until Shkia, or is it that he has 24 hours? So if we say that he's only allowed to be mefer nedarim on Shabbos that are letzorech haShabbos and not the other kind, then for example, the one, let's say, he can't be mefer one not to put on makeup. The result that would imply that He has 24 hours. So therefore, why does he have to be mefored on Shabbos? Let him be mefored on Motzei Shabbos. He still has time. It's still within the 24 hours. As opposed to if we say that you can be mefored any kind of neder on Shabbos, why would that be? Why would the Chacham allow that? Because he only has until Shkia. And if not, then she's going to have to go to Beis Din. It's going to be a huge hassle. And it's going to be a bazillion for her. So therefore, the Chacham would allow him to be mefored any kind of neder. So if we're saying that Zuti Torah Braisa, that you can only be matter them on, that you can only be made for them on Shabbos, Lotzorah HaShabbos, then that implies that he has 24 hours, so therefore you could just as well do it Motzei Shabbos. The Ramban actually over here on the Gemara talks about the question, so what happens if he made the neder, what happens if he made the neder, let's say Friday afternoon, shortly before Shabbos, and the 24 hours, even if we say he has 24 hours, it's still going to expire within Shabbos, would we say he's allowed to or not? So he says maybe yes, because then like this, he's not going to be able to be made food otherwise. Maybe not, because after all, in general, we say he has time after Shabbos, and therefore the Chacham are not going to make an exception in this case. Okay. Anyway, that's all one version. Lishna Achrina, another version of the discussion goes like this. Iboilahu, Lutzorach Atavayukoi. Do we say that the word Lutzorach in our Mishnah refers to both the Nedorim that the husband is canceling and the Nedorim that Beis Din is being Matur Neder? V'shaloi Lutzorach loy, and the implication is that you can't be made for Neder when it's not Lutzorach. Alma Hafaris Nedorim Mesles. Okay, so that's sorry. In the first version, we weren't getting into this Mesles issue or not. We were just saying, if it's not Lutzorach HaShabbos, then you can't be made for it. It means that he's only going to have until Shkia, and then it means after Shabbos, she's going to have to go to a Chochem or to Beis Din. Doesn't matter, because it's not Lutzorach HaShabbos. In the second version, we're making more explicit this connection between the amount of time he has to be made for the Neder and whether he's allowed to do it on Shabbos. So if we say that Lutzorach refers to both of them, then Alma HaFaris Adorim Mesles, then that means that HaFaris Adorim you have 24 hours, so therefore he doesn't have to be made for it on Shabbos. He could just as well be made for it after Shabbos. Therefore, we would say that only if the neder itself impinges on Shabbos, for example, she made a neder, let's say not to eat meat or drink wine or whatever, then he could be made for it on Shabbos, but not otherwise. I don't. So that's one possibility. Maybe the word Letzardach refers only to asking the Chacham, and Aval HaFaris Nedarim HaFidl Shaloi Letzardach. HaFaris Nedarim that the husband does for his wife could be even it's Shaloi Letzardach. Now, why would that be mutter if it's Shaloi Letzardach, if it's a neder that has nothing to do with Shabbos? Alma HaFaris Nedarim Kol HaYom, because he would only have until Shkia, and therefore the Chachamim gave him that dispensation in order not to have to schlep his wife to Beis Din, and she's going to have Bizoyan there or whatever. So what is it? And the answer is Toshman, Tony Rav Zuti, Dvei Rav Papi, Rav Zuti, Torah Braise, in the Yeshiva of Rav Papi, Mefir Nedorim HaShabbos, Lutzorach HaShabbos. You can be made for Neder on Shabbos only when it is Lutzorach HaShabbos, only when it is necessary for Shabbos, implying Lutzorach HaShabbos, Ein Shalai Lutzorach HaShabbos, Loi, Alma HaFaris Nedorim, Mesles. So in the first version, we just said, okay, so that means if it's not Lutzorach HaShabbos, you can't be made for it on Shabbos. In the second version, we're saying we can deduce from that also that the din is that he has 24 hours to do HaFaris Nedorim, and therefore you can just as well do it Motzei Shabbos. Amar Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi says that doesn't work. V'ha'anan t'nan. We learn in a Mishnah in Nedarim on the subject, HaFaris Nedarim Kol HaYom, that HaFaris Nedarim can only be done on the day when the husband finds out about the neder. V'yesh b'davar l'hokol l'hachmir. Sometimes you have a kola in it, sometimes a chomer. In other words, sometimes that leaves him only a very short window of opportunity to be made for the neder. Sometimes it leaves a much longer one. Ketzad, what does this mean? Nodra leilish Shabbos, if she makes the neder on Friday night, may for leilish Shabbos via Mashabbos ad shetechshach, then he has the entire Friday night and the entire Shabbos day until it gets dark to be made for the neder. On the other hand, nodra im chashecha. Another im chashecha, but if she makes the neder right before it gets dark on Motzei Shabbos, mefer ad shalei techshach, then he can only be mefer until it gets dark. She im loy hefer mechashecha shecha, any yachol hafer. But if he doesn't do it after it gets dark, then it's too late. So we see clearly from the Mishnah over there that it all depends. It's only until it gets dark, until Shkia, until Tseis, whatever it is. The point is, none of this idea of that he has 24 hours. So what are you telling me that he has 24 hours? And what are you telling me that our Mishnah is saying that he can only be made for Nedarim that are Lutzorach HaShabbos, and the other ones he can be made for on Motzei Shabbos? The answer is Tanoi. It's actually Machlokas Tanoi. The Tanya, HaFaris Nedarim Kol HaYom. The Tanakama of the Braisa says HaFaris Nedarim is only that day, only until Shkia. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amar Masles. They say you have 24 hours. So our Mishnah would be like them. So our Mishnah, as Zuti Dveira Papa understands it, would be according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda. That you have 24 hours, and therefore on Shabbos you can only be made for the Nedarim that have directly to do with Shabbos, and the rest of them be made for on Matzah Shabbos. Now the Halacha is not like that. The Halacha is like the Tanakama over there that you only have, and like the Stam Mishnah in Nedarim that you only have until Shkia, and therefore the halacha is that you can be made for any kind of neder on Shabbos, because otherwise it's not going to be possible to be made for it after Shabbos. Okay. The Mishnah had said v'nish'olim the nedarim, that you're allowed to ask a chacham to be matir a neder if it's necessary for Shabbos. So ibay lahu. So we have a question. What do we mean you're allowed to do that when it's l'sorach? Shaloi hoyolai p'nai. Does that mean even if he didn't have time before Shabbos to be matir neder? Aduma filo hoyolai p'nai. Or maybe it means even if he had time before Shabbos to go to the chacham, we still allow him to go on Shabbos because it is the sorech Shabbos. Tashma. So we can prove it is the kikulei rabbanon la rav zutra breid rav zera. The Chachamim sat down for a Beis Din for Rav Zutter, Breid Rav Zera, v'shoru le'nidre. They were matu him a neder that would have otherwise impinged on Shabbos. Even though he had time to be matur that neder before Shabbos, so we see that you're allowed to be matur a neder that has to do that impinges on Shabbos, even if you had time to be matur that neder before Shabbos. You're allowed to be matur it on Shabbos in order that the guy can have oneg Shabbos. Okay. We said in the Mishnah Shapok was a morba tafiyach. We said that they stopped up the window using an earthenware jug, and then they tied up an earthenware cup and measured whether there's a tefach hole in the gigis in the barrel. So what's going on over there? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, hilkati ktana hoisa ben shnei batim. There was a small hilkati between two houses. Rashi learns that a hilkati means an alley. So we'll talk soon. Tosfos has a different explanation, but let's start with Rashi, that it means there was an alley between the two houses. The gigas stuka monachas al gabon. There was the roof of the alley was made up. There was a barrel with a crack in it above the alley. Now underneath it on the ground in the alley, there was a mess lying there in the alley. Maybe not a full mess. Maybe only a kazayis of a mess. Whatever it is, the point is. So now the problem is like this. There's this mess or this piece of mess in the alley. If the window is open, then the tumah is going to be able to come in through the hole, because you have when you have a window in a wall, it actually depends what purpose the window is there for. Sometimes it can be up to the size of a large fist, which the Mishnah mentioned in Kalim is actually the size of a regular person's head. But in any case, if you have a hole that big and it's meant for, if you have a hole that's that big, then the tumah can come in to the house. So they took on Shabbos, they took an earthenware keli and plugged up the hole with it in order to keep the tumah from going into the house. So the first thing they did was they closed up the mor with the clo- they closed up this hole, which was meant, it was a mor, it was a hole that was meant for light to come into the room. So they closed it up with a tafiyach, with an earthenware jug, in order to prevent the tumah from coming in to the house. Because what they did is they used the outside of the keli. They had the bottom of the keli facing towards the outside, and a kli cheres doesn't become tameh from the outside, so that blocks the tumah from getting in. Then the koshu is amakeda begemi. Then what they did is they took an earthenware cup, which they knew was exactly a tefach wide. And they tied it with a piece of string, not a piece of string, they tied it with a piece of grass to a stick, and they stuck it out the window, they wanted to see, will it go through that crack in the gigas, which is the roof of the alley. And the point is, if the cup will go through the crack, it means the crack is wider than a tefach. Then it means the tumah will go just up and out through that crack, rather than going horizontally into the houses. And opposed to, if the cup doesn't go through, then you know the quack is a tefach or narrower, and then the tumah is able to spread along the alley under this gigis, and then it's able to go into the houses when the windows are open. So again, they use gemi. It actually says over here because gemi is it's roi lemaichel behema. So therefore you're not going to leave it there permanently. Because you're not going to leave it there permanently, and anyway, it actually says when it dries up, it's anyway the knot is anyway going to break on its own, so it's not a kesher shokayama. So that was the purpose of all this measuring that they did. So that's according to Rashi. Rashi himself actually says that I don't fully understand what the difference is. Why would it depend on whether there's a tefach there, whether there's a tefach gap over there, if part of the tumah is under, if you're talking about a whole body over there is in the alleyway, then it shouldn't really matter. The whole body is obviously not under a one tefach wide crack anyway. Part of it is of necessity under the intact parts of the roof of the gigis over there, and shouldn't that be enough to bring the tumah into the houses? So some other rishonim say that maybe we're talking about it wasn't a full mess; it was only a kazayis of a mess. All right. Anyway, Tosfos brings on a manalef, and Rabbi Nachman also explains differently that hilkati means a mound of dirt or a mound of rocks or whatever that was between the two houses, and you have at one end of it, you have a gigis over there, you have this barrel with a crack in it, and you want to see whether the crack is wide enough to prevent it from being considered one to prevent the tumor from going through from one side to the other. So like this, if the crack was a tefach wide, then the tumor would be able to go through the hilkati, through this mound of dirt from one side to the other, because it has a tefach opening to go through, as opposed to if not, then not.
How can you measure on Shabbos?
So the answer is that we're allowed to measure for purposes of a mitzvah. This was for purposes of a mitzvah. That's what we're saying. It's mutter. And that's the Mishnah continues. And when Yivreim Lamanu Shepoikikin Amodzid in Bekoshim Shabbos, based on what Reb Tzadok's father and Abba Sholman Botnis did in this case, where they used a piece of grass to tie this cup in order to measure this gigis. And they did measuring on Shabbos. They closed up the window with the earthenware jug, and they did all these three things: closing up, measuring, and tying. So we see that you're allowed to do such things on Shabbos. Again, according to the Bavli, at least the closing up the window you're allowed to do whether it's Lotzorech Mitzvah or not. On the other hand, the measuring you're only allowed to do when it's Lotzorech Mitzvah. And Koshrin, you have a machlokas between Tosfos and the Rambam, whether you're allowed to do that, anytime on Shabbos, as long as it's not a Kesher Shokayama, or whether you're only allowed to do that Lotzorech Mitzvah. In that sicha I mentioned before, the Rebbe talks about that maybe the Yerushalmi, that apparently the Yerushalmi would disagree and say that all of them are allowed b'chlal.
Can you really say it's a mitzvah when they had the time to wait until after Shabbos to see where the tumor comes in or it doesn't come in?
No, because if you have koyanim in the house, if there's tumor, then they have to get out of the house. And if there's kodshim or truma in the house, then they're going to become tummy. So you need to know right away.
Well, the Mishnah doesn't say that.
It doesn't say, but obviously that's the implication. Why do they need to know where the tumor is coming into the house? Because they need to know what do we do with the tumor and the kodshim or whatever. Yeah.
So well, let the koyanim.
Okay, you know what? Let's finish off over here. We don't have a lot of time. We said based on what they said, we see that you're allowed to close up a window or measure or tie on Shabbos. So the Gemara tells in this connection about measuring. Ula ikla beresh kolosa. Ula visited the house of the Resh Galusa. Chazia l'Rav Barav Huna de Yosef ba'avna de Maya b'kam Moshachle. He saw Rav Barav Huna was sitting in a tub of water and was measuring it. And he was measuring it. So Ula says, Emer d'amir rabbanim didi de mitzvah. Sure, the rabbanim said you're allowed to do a measuring on Shabbos where you're doing it for a mitzvah. De lav mitzvah mi omer. When did they ever say it's not for a mitzvah? And here it's not for a mitzvah. So he says, I'm just playing around over here. I'm just doing an or lasuki ba'alma. He says, to keep myself busy. There's a letter that Rebbe wrote to somebody, actually, you heard last night, Rebbe Oster mentioned it, that where the Rebbe analyzed the question over here, are we talking about that he is measuring, but he's not doing it, he's not really caring about the purpose of the measurement, or is he not even really measuring at all, he's just playing around with the measuring instrument. In a different sicha that Rebbe talks about, so why indeed? I mean, why Rav Barahona has nothing better to do than to be misasik over there? So he brings from different mefarshim. Maybe, for example, he wanted to distract himself so he doesn't think words of Torah, because after all, he's sitting there in the bath and he can't. The Rebbe says shoylel all those explanations, and he says basically what it is Rav Barahona is doing this precisely in order to demonstrate to us what is allowed and what is not allowed on Shabbos. In other words, misasik has the usual meaning that it does throughout Shas, as we had earlier in our Masechta, where you're doing one activity and in the course of it you end up doing something else. Here he's doing an activity, but the real purpose of it is not to measure, but in order to show us the halacha of what you're allowed and not allowed to do on Shabbos, that you're allowed to do it where you're not doing it for a purpose of measurement at all. And so we're finishing off with that, that even when he's sitting there in this tub of water, and he apparently has to be sitting there for some time for whatever reason, nevertheless, he's putting the time to good use and using it to teach us a halacha about what you're allowed and not allowed to do on Shabbos.
How could he teach us an halacha that requires knowing his thoughts and he's staying quiet about them? I mean, someone
he says, Misasik Balmano. When Ula asked him, what are you doing? And he answered,
yeah, because Ula asked him.
That's fine. Ula asked him. Okay, so then if Ula hadn't been there, then we wouldn't know the story in the first place. But because Ula was there, and he saw Rav Barahona measuring, and Rav Barahona explains that I'm doing it as Misasik, and so the Rebbe explains, it means that he's doing it in order to teach us this halacha of what is allowed and what is not allowed on Shabbos.
So you're saying basically he started doing this while Ula was present.
Maybe he started doing this when he saw that Ula was coming. We don't know. Maybe you would have to say that in the Sikha. I don't know. The Rebbe brings also over there from Ben Yehoyada, who says that Ba'alma, usually Ba'alma in the Gemara sometimes just means like that, but Ba'alma literally means in the world. So Misasik Ba'alma Ano, I am being Misasik with something in the world. Name, so Ben Yehoyada takes it to mean that like he's saying, I'm being misasik right now with my body to make my body feel better by sitting in this tub. That Rebbe takes it in a different way. I'm being misasik in the world to show the world a halacha that otherwise it might not have known. Hadron Lachmicha Hershech of Slikal Masechta Shabbos. We will, Shkaya. Bez Hashem, tomorrow begin Masechta Erevin in good time. Shkaya.